for Barbie Lightning. You'll have a great day, great night. And whenever y'all tune in, whether you're live or on demand, we really appreciate y'all for joining us for the RBLR Bulls show. We got a lot to talk about today. We got men's basketball, we got women's basketball, we got the baseball season, we got lacrosse, we got softball. We've got all of this stuff to talk about, and we're going to discuss it, break it down in depth. And if it's your first time joining us, and if you like what you hear, you want to stay up to date, hit that like and subscribe button. We'd really appreciate it. You can also give us a follow at RBLR Bulls or at RBLR Sports. We would really appreciate it. But before we go any further, I need to introduce my wonderful co-hosts who are going to help me discuss, break down, and talk about USF athletics, starting with the man, the myth, the legend himself, Jonathan Shields. How are you doing this evening, Mr. Shields?
I'm great. I love that intro. Man, the myth, the legend. I don't know if I'm outside of a man, much other of those things, but good to be back. Big week for USF sports, especially in basketball, which I'm sure we'll get into in a second. But
yeah,
it's just good to be back.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about, especially, like you said, basketball related. They're in the thick of their conference play, and they played a bunch of games this past week. Some good, a little bit of bad, but we'll focus on the good because there's a lot to talk about there. But before we do, the last piece of this wonderful puzzle, but certainly not the least, Mr. Musab Tariq, how you doing, my friend?
So far, so good, Carter. Honestly, excited to be talking again. Some USF athletics, always so much going on. Now more than ever, I feel like we're going through the thick of it. I mean, just a whole lot of action and a lot of great takeaways, a lot of positives as well. Yeah. So yeah, man.
Yeah, a lot of these sports are in good shape. We were talking about before the show how during football season it's pretty much football and that's really it. But now, man, it's just so much going on, and I kind of enjoy it almost even more so, frankly, because there's just so much to talk about, so much to discuss. And we'll start with the big ones, and that's men's and women's basketball. We'll start with the men's basketball because there is nothing but positives to take away from this past week for them. Started out with that win against Wichita State, 66-58. They were down 33-26 at halftime, though, but they outscored the Shockers 40-25 in the second half. It was some really impressive performances from, the usual kind of suspects, Wes Ennis, Isaiah Nelson, Joseph Pinion. But Mr. Tariq, what were sort of the keys to the game that led to this USF victory, especially overcoming such a tough deficit? Because they fell down early in the first matchup against Wichita State, weren't really able to overcome it. So what went differently this time that allowed USF to take home this victory?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, the three big things was, first of all, just, it was a defensive showdown, just holding Wichita State to like 32% from the shooting from the field, 21% just from the three-pointers. But it was also the way we finished, the way we executed. And because Wichita State missed 16 of their last 18 field goal attempts. So they couldn't really get anything going. And one thing that, I wanted to give them a shout out on was, the rebounds. We dominated the glass 44-37 when it came to the rebounding, racked up 14 offensive rebounds. And, the big thing, or, the nice thing is that I saw was, we did our best, to lock down Will Berg, their big man. He's like 7'2". My only fear was, are we going to get into foul trouble, or are we just going to let this guy cook and get second chance points? So, it was great. Nelson, and the rest of the guys held it down. And then, as you said, Wes Ennis, Pinion, CJ Brown, all of you, stepping up, big time. But I wanted to also kind of ask Jonathan, this is, how do you prepare, when it comes to, the matchups are always going to be there, the star guard or their star forward or something. But sometimes I just feel like it's so interesting, when it comes to the, the big man situation, especially because you're comparing, 7'2 versus 6'10. I think I believe Isaiah Nelson and Damian Collins is also 6'10, but what I remember, Nelson is your tallest guy, and now you're going against a 7'2 Will Berg. So I don't know how much how often does a basketball team think about those kind of situations.
It's not more about the height, it's more about the skill. So I know Will Berg because he was at Purdue. He was on their team that made the national championship. So there's a bunch of different ways to guard the post. If you're going to guard one-on-one, it's how you're going to guard the post, right? When I was in college, we did hard 3-4s, which means you have a hand, you're behind, but you have a hand, you know, kind of take away that dice. You're going to have to make a pretty decent path to get in. That's how most teams guard it, hard 3-4s. If I was a guard, if I got switched onto a big, we were taught we had to front the big, right? So you got to do everything you can, battle everything you can to get in front of the big. Now, when the big gets the ball, it's also important to push the big out now, because if you catch it on the block, he's going to score. If he catches it at 18 feet, that's a big difference. So there are a million different ways to do it. You can double from the baseline. You can have the guard that's right there just dig, which means once they start bouncing, they reach in and try to steal the ball. We saw scout plan based. For example, Iowa State, I know I talked about them last week, but they double from that baseline regardless
of I saw the Iowa State Houston game actually earlier this week.
It doesn't matter how good you are. They're coming from that baseline, right? And that's part of like that no middle that we talked about last week that Iowa State does. So it's all matchup dependent with someone like Will Berg, who again, he only averages right around 9 points, 8.8 points or something. He's someone that I would be kind of hard 3-4s, and I would trust Nelson and whoever else to kind of play one on one. I don't love doubling unless someone's really killing you, because it's all matches. It's a team shoots 20% from three, then you double. But it's a good question, because I mean, there's 10 different ways that you could guard the post. The worst thing you can do is just sit behind and let him catch it 8 feet and then go over his left shoulder, which all righties.
My only fear is just, you know, getting those kind of rebounds, those second chance, you know, points. Yeah. Or
and then you've got to trust your guys to gang rebound. Yeah, that's what we
exactly.
call it.
Exactly. All five. I was just going to say. And I have to say, look, I hate to put him down like this, but Isaiah Nelson has more ups than Will Berg. So, you know, respectfully, the 6'10", 7'2 height difference, now that I think about it, doesn't really make a difference. I mean, he's got a longer wingspan, but you know, let's be honest. Some of these big men, they just got size. They can't even jump. You know, kind of very just, you know, heavy legged. If that's even a term or something. You know, anyways. But
yeah, definitely some great stuff. I mean, I thought that there were some really fun performances. I know Wes Ennis had his first career double double with 11 rebounds. That's a career high. And then so it was clearly, I mean, Jonathan, like you said, gang rebounding, everyone boxing out, doing their job, because, you know, it doesn't just take one man to rebound. It takes a whole team. It really takes all five guys, which that's super cliche, but it's true. You know, it's the truth. You know, it takes a whole team to be able to rebound like that and to hold a rebound advantage the way that USF did, 44-37, including those 14 offensive rebounds. That takes a team effort. All guys that are playing, you know, they gotta do their thing. So yeah, it was really impressive to watch them do that. But I wanted to focus also on the late game execution piece of it, Musa, because you brought that up, and I had a question for Jonathan about it, because we've kind of touched on a little bit before with, you know, the Bulls' struggles in previous close games, and we'll touch on it in the FAU game too a little bit. But how much does USF's ability to execute, I guess, if you want to call it that, in these final seconds or these final minutes of the game come down to them sort of fixing sort of prior problems? Or is it maybe just like, well, Wichita just got cold from the field and, you know, it was a little bit, that's just how the ball bounces. How much do you kind of have to weigh that, weigh those two different things when you're talking about late game execution like this?
Yeah, it depends how the game goes. And I thought USF guarded at a pretty high level.
Right.
If I'm being honest. So yeah, you know, Wichita went cold, but, you know, USF also guarded at a pretty high level. And, you know, we talked about it. There's ways to guard, to execute kind of down the stretch. You can practice it, which I'm sure every team does. But, you know, you look at the FAU game, it's a turnover at the end of regulation, right? And it's like that those kind of things can't happen. You got to be able to get a shot up down the stretch there. Right. So, you know, you can practice it all you want. You really can. But if the guys – guys got to want the moment, if that makes sense. Like, you know, Wes Ennis got to want the ball with 15 seconds left to go make a play. You know what I mean? So, you know, you can only practice so much until you got to have your guys just go make plays. And against Wichita, I think they did. You know, they made a lot of really nice plays. And, you know, against FAU, they did in the overtime. But anytime you see a turnover at the end of regulation, I mean, that's like,
yeah, it's not great.
It's pretty brutal.
Yeah, man. And speaking of that FAU game, they took it into OT, but they managed to come away with an 83-81 victory. We've seen it in prior games where they get into these really close situations, and this was a nail biter. I mean, I was watching this game at a Red Robin after an adult baseball league game on my phone, just, you know, munching on a burger. But it was a great game, man. Like from a pure basketball perspective, just super back and forth. I think 17 different lead changes. I mean, it was really, really crazy stuff. But what were some key performances, Mr. Tariq? I know there were some really, like Wes Ennis had a really big time game with 27 points, but how did the other, you know, sort of stars of the starting lineup do against these Owls?
Yeah. Shout out Wes Ennis and Joseph Pinion, you know, who made a little bit of history as well. They are the first teammates program history to both hit 80 plus threes in one season. Ooh. So yeah, Wes Ennis took off, 27 point game. He scored at one point, 13 straight points. And then
wow.
Joseph Pinion, coming in clutch, 15 points, third place for most threes in a single, you know, USF season. So I'll be honest, I remember I was watching it. He was, you know, a little bit shaky from the start, but I'll tell you this, we're a second half team. Every time I see this team, I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to stress it. We're a second half team. I guess we're a second half / overtime team in this case. But no, yeah, Ennis and Pinion went off. I mean, yeah, dude, they just, and kind of what Jonathan was saying was, you know, Wes Ennis has to, you know, kind of be that guy. Well, it was kind of what we saw, you know, with the FAU, Ennis and Pinion. I mean, Pinion had a couple opportunities. Whether he made it or missed it, I mean, I respect the decision. But I also wanted to give a shout-out to C.J. Brown. This guy is 6'2", but he drives in like, you know, he's like a 6'6" Kobe or, you know, like a LeBron James or something. This guy is not scared. 17 points and also 6-for-6 on the free throw line, which I'll tell you this, it comes real clutch, especially in a big game like this. I don't understand how sometimes, you know, big players can, you know, miss these free throws, I guess, you know, the pressure and intensity and all that, but it's just, they're free and all that. So that came, he came in real clutch. But also want to give a shout out to Isaiah Nelson, you know, not the Mr. Double-Double we know. I think he was real close. I think he had 8 points, but racked up 10 rebounds, you know, to help, you know, with the battle on the board. So those four guys and then the rest of our team, you know, just coming in clutch where needed be. I wanted to give, you know, recognition to people like, you know, Devin Haid, you know, don't get many minutes, but, you know, do what they can. But was there anything else that y'all saw, you know, during the game or anything else that stood out?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to go back to that second half team point, because I think that's incredibly, incredibly accurate for sure. USF seems to really come alive in the second half, even when they come up short, like in that first Wichita State game that we were just talking about, where they lost, you know, they got off to that rough start and then they surged back. So it's really an interesting point. Jonathan, what goes into that? Because you hear about it with like the Golden State Warriors, like their third quarters when they were in their prime, like it was always like, oh, well, you know, you're up on Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors by 8 going into halftime. And then like you go into the fourth down 20 and it's like, oh, wow, we just got ran over. So what goes into halftime adjustments? Like you hear in football, like Peyton Manning would always talk about like, man, there's no such thing as a halftime adjustment. Like that's stupid. But what's different in basketball about the halftime adjustments for coaches and the players?
Yeah, there's a million different things. You know, you can just completely change how you're guarding someone. For example, you can change your ball screen coverage. You can change, you know, the sets that you run. So I think in basketball, more than any other sport, you can have halftime adjustments. You know, I watched the USF game. There's not anything just like glaring. It's like, oh my goodness, they're doing stuff completely different from the first half and second half. And then sometimes you're just kind of skill wanes on people. When you have 8 legit guys that USF plays that can all hurt you, which we've talked about in the past, like that weighs on you a little bit. It was funny. So Rich Homburg, who called the game for ESPN, he's one of my kind of best mentors in the industry. So I was talking with him yesterday and we were both just like, you know, like Wes Ennis is a guy, you know, he's really been on a tear recently. And he has, man, the fact that first of all, Tulsa's lost 3 in a row, which now USF has, I believe is either 2 or 2.5 game lead. And now USF has won however many out of the last whatever, it's like 10 of 11 or whatever it is now, or 8 of 9 or something. They're just playing really well, man. They're extremely well coached. And, you know, the coach comes from that Nate Oates Alabama tree. And you see that when they play. You know, they get up a ton of threes. They're not taking bad mid-range shots. They're getting to the bucket. And And this all brings back to the second half adjustments. Yeah, sometimes, you know, you're going to hit five more threes in a half than you did in the first half. You know, sometimes in the second half, you can hit seven threes. You only made one in the first half. And, you know, obviously USF didn't have anything that dramatic happen during the games, but just the way USF plays, it's so hard to guard for a full 40 minutes that at some point they're going to get that run. And it's, can you respond? You know, FAU responded better than Wichita State did. And some teams that they've played really haven't had a response all year. So that's what makes USF kind of so hard to play against.
Yeah, I mean, I read this interview from they interviewed Isaiah Nelson about what, you know, kind of goes into to this USF team's success so far this season. And his quote was, they run you into the ground. You know, like they just, they're all in such massive shape. Like you watch a USF game and you, and he talked about it, like you have fun watching this team play because they are just constantly gas pedal to the, you know, pedal to the floor type of thing where they're just always moving. They are pressing, they are playing hard. And so you can't really relax against this team because they are in massive shape. They're in great shape. And yeah, Coach Hodgson coaches them hard. Don't get me wrong, but like you said, it's really impressive to see them kind of, you know, just kind of overwhelm these teams sometimes with their, just their style of play. And it's super, like we've kind of talked about it in the past, a little bit data driven, you know, like you said, no bad mid-range shots, only threes and layups really. And Coach Hodgson emphasizes that in press conferences. He talks about how, you know, they want to get to the free throw line. They want to shoot threes and they want to get layups because those are the most efficient ways to score points. So yeah, it's really fun to watch this USF team play. And yeah, they've got a 2-game lead in the American Conference standings. They're up at the top. So they're in prime position, man. Like we were talking about it at the beginning of the season where, you know, they're going to be one of the better teams in the American Conference, but we weren't necessarily sure they were going to be able to establish themselves as top dog in Coach Hodgson's first season. But sure enough, man, they've been able to do that. And Wes Ennis also earned AAC Player of the Week honors after his 27-point performance against FAU. So well-deserved. Wes Ennis, he's been having a heck of a season. He's just been on a tear, really, scoring it. And shooting from deep, really doing everything that USF has needed from their lead or co-lead guard. I guess really more their off guard. You know, CJ Brown's kind of their lead guard. But regardless, he's been great. So really nice to see Wes Ennis get that recognition for his proper execution. But next up, they got a home game versus Memphis on Thursday. If you're listening live, that's tomorrow, obviously, February 19th. Memphis 12-13 overall, 7-5 in the AAC. They're 2.5 games behind the Bulls for the top spot. So definitely not a slouch, not a team you can overlook. Musab, who are some guys that you're looking at on this Memphis Tigers team that maybe we should look out for? Some kind of guys that could maybe give USF some trouble as USF looks to continue their 5-game winning streak.
Yeah, absolutely. First one I'm looking at is Doug McDaniel. He's basically, you know, like the engine of their team. Leads the team in points and assists and steals, you know, 12, almost 13 points per game, almost 5 assists per game, and then almost like 2 steals per game. So he's kind of that disruptive force, you know, got to lock him down. It's, every AAC team has got that one guy. So he's, you know, in this case, probably, you know, the Rowan Brumbaugh of Memphis, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. But, hey, don't forget about – but I'll tell you this, you know, this is what happens with every team, both our men's and women's team's faces. You can never just focus on one guy or one girl, you know what I'm saying? So watch out for Sincere Parker, also a dangerous scoring threat, averaging about 12 points per game, reliable shooter, almost 40%, you know, from the perimeter. So, you know, just don't let him get hot. And then, this is, Memphis's Will Berg, except an inch shorter. Aaron Bradshaw, 7'1" center, they're big men, you know, so just try to find ways to, you know, slow them down. Don't let them, you know, get the second chance points. But it should be a good matchup. I just hate to say it, but, you know, some kind of off the court situation as Memphis is going through it right now. They had two guys, two role players who I think were recently suspended right before this Utah State game that they played. So, the vibes, you know, are just not over there. Not that that really means much, but this is not the Memphis team that, you know, we've known in the past. A lot of things have changed. So I'm confident, though, you know, we will be able to, you know, get the job done. I don't remember from the top of my head how many points we're favored by, but I'm gonna just guess maybe like 9.5, 10. I'll have to look it up. But yeah.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned the Utah State game sort of passingly, but Utah State ran over Memphis 99-75, and that's sort of their shared opponent, like you said. And yeah, it'll be interesting. Jonathan, how much stock do you put into that kind of thing? Like, how much do you think, like, not even necessarily for the teams mentally, but for an outsider's perspective, how much stock should you put into, like, the shared opponents kind of thing? Like, oh, well, they played this team and they lost, so maybe USF has a little bit more confidence going in, I guess, or how much stock do you put into that?
Yeah, not a ton, because every game's so different, right? You know, one game could be such an outlier game where someone hits 14 threes, right, and a team wins. But, you know, obviously it's still something. It's not nothing. But I did want to say Doug McDaniel, when he was at Michigan. So he was at Michigan for 2 years in Michigan State and then now Memphis. He gave Florida like 35 in his sophomore year. And I remember thinking, I was like, this guy is incredible. Like, he's incredible. And it's just funny how he ended up at Memphis now. And Memphis was a school, I mean, they were a 5 seed in March Madness last year. A 5 seed. Like, that's not a 5 seed, you know? Like, that's a big deal. Right. They got upset by Colorado State, who then lost on a buzzer beater to Maryland. So, this is normally the class of the American, you know? But USF can kind of do something where it's kind of the new guard, I guess, right? They beat FAU, who's in that quote unquote class of the American, obviously made a Final Four a few years ago, made the tournament the year after as a higher seed. And then Memphis, who's been really good for a long time since Penny Hardaway's been there. A long time, you know, they've been pretty consistently good. And all of a sudden, here's little old USF, who hasn't made the tournament since, what, like 2011 or something? I mean, it's been a long time, maybe not quite that long. But, I mean, this is just another one of those, like, we're here type games, in case anyone had any doubt, because Memphis went out and played Purdue, right? They went out and played, like, Mississippi State. They went out and played, I believe, Louisville. I don't have their schedule in front of me, but I'm pretty sure at least they're three. And then another high major team, Mississippi State's not going to make the tournament, but Purdue's going to be a top 3 seed. Louisville's going to be a top 4 seed in terms of 4 seed or higher. So it's you know, they're tested, right? It's so funny. Doug McDaniel, he had to, like, be on a minutes restriction with Michigan because of something that happened. He got, like, suspended for a little bit. And then – yeah, but I don't ever forget. He was so good. And that Florida team ended up being really good too. They made the SEC championship, but it's just like, you know, it's just funny seeing the transfer portal era kind of where these guys end up.
Yeah, man. I mean, Memphis, I was kind of doing some like light preliminary research on them, and it was just like Memphis scandal, and it was just like a very long list. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of tough to sift through that. So like Musab said, the vibes are kind of low, and it kind of speaks to why, you know, they've taken a bit of a step back after, Jonathan, like you said, such a monster season. But they've still, you know, Doug McDaniel, he's got that potential, you know, the ability to kind of go off, because like you said, he was at Michigan and he's kind of bounced around a little bit. So it's really, like you said, it's really fascinating in the transfer portal era to see where all these guys end up. We see it in football, obviously, too, with a guy like Dylan Gabriel or something that goes from UCF to Oklahoma to Oregon, you know, just really, really weird stuff. You know, we're in a very strange era of college sports, and I don't really see it getting any different. But regardless, it should be a really fun game tomorrow night. And, you know, obviously, if you're itching for something to do, it's going to be a great one, and should be kind of fun. I think they've got some like weird Barstool personality, Filthy Frank or something, that's going to show up. Coach
Hodgson. Oh, yeah. Frank the Tank or something. Or yeah, Frank he's the from Tank. New York. Yeah, I think he's like some iconic like Mets guy or something.
Yeah. So shout out to him. Yeah. Coach Hodgson seems to have a good relationship with him. Yeah, so, you know, supporting USF, go Bulls, that's cool. So, you know, good for him, and you'll have a chance. If you go to that game, I guess you'll have a chance to see him sitting courtside or something. But regardless, that'll be a lot of fun. So moving on to the women's basketball side of things, where they had 3 games since the last time we spoke, and they went 2-1 over that stretch. But we'll start with their big time W versus Tulsa, 72-60. It was their 6th straight home win. USF kind of just ran the table on Tulsa in this game. Tulsa's men team having a great season. Their women's team, not nearly as much as the men's team, but USF held them to one made basket on their first 13 attempts from the floor. It was just really kind of a from the jump type of win for USF. They out hustled them 51-33 rebounding advantage. We saw who were the biggest gals that had some really big time games against Tulsa.
Probably just the usual, but hey, absolutely though. Rightfully so. First of all, shout out Katie Davidson, career high 5 3 pointers, finished with 22 points. Just, you know, she's in this case, probably, you know, the engine of this team. I've watching so many of these games, she's got that kind of, I mean, she's a fifth year, so she's kind of got that, like, you know, that veteran presence, the, you know, that leadership and all that. And, you know, just making things happen wherever possible. But this team, of course, is, you know, no team without other people like Carla Brito, double-double machine, grabbing 15 rebounds, 10 points. Also, career-high 7 assists.
Only 3 away from that triple-double.
Carla Brito is, you know, honestly, like the USF women's basketball version of, like, a jack-of-all-trades. You know what I'm saying? I mean, for being 5'10", I mean, she will body, like, a 6'3" center, you know, with no issue. She'll get these saucy Steve Nash-esque passes. She can shoot. She can do it all. So it just, you know, so happy to have her. And then, you know, our rebounding machine as well is Lauren Putu, who racked up 15 points and 12 rebounds for her fourth double-double this season. And then another, you know, just big role player, kind of a, you know, somewhat of a floor general as well, just the way she was dishing out those assists. 7 assists for Stephanie Ingram, as well as 9 points. So, yeah, those four just, you know, really stood out. And as you said already, Carter, yeah, they dominated from the jump, just, you know, making things happen wherever need to be. We got shooters, you know, wherever you want to put them. It just comes down to, you know, kind of the pace and then sticking to the fundamentals. I do like it sometimes when we get a little bit saucy with it, but, you know, we got to take it easy on that sometimes. But, hey, it's fine. You know, when you're going against Tulsa, you know, might as well have a little fun with it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it seems like when they take care of the ball, if they're not sloppy with it, like you said, if they strike that balance of creativity, but also playing within themselves, if you will, it seems like they're a hard team to beat. And they really struck that balance well against Tulsa. And then moving on to the next game, they also took down UTSA 69-63. They held UTSA to a really poor shooting night, 31% from the field. USF also racked up 7 blocks. They were also great offensively. They shot 20 points higher from the field, 51%. Eden Battle, my goodness, 17 points and a season-high 9 assists. She also hit 7 of 7 free throw attempts. So she was great out there. Katie Davidson, what more can you say? 17 points, 2 steals and a block. And then Carla Brito had another double-double, 13 points and 12 rebounds. I think the good comparison maybe for her would maybe be Russell Westbrook, like really just getting involved with everything, you know, doing a little bit of everything on the court. So shout out Carla Brito. Maybe Russell Westbrook is actually the NBA version of Carla Brito. Maybe that's the way we should put it. Lior Maputo really anchoring that interior defense with 4 of the 17 blocks. And then it had 8 points too. So 3 straight wins for USF on that UTSA game. So really, really impressive stuff from USF against both of these opponents. And then came Rice. they took a 78-72 L against the Rice Owls. They lost to Food, but Rice is one of the better teams in the American Conference in women's basketball. They're number one. So that's not nearly as much as poor of a showing as the football team would be losing to Rice like they did last year, unfortunately, or 2 seasons ago now. I don't know how you want to call it, but the Bulls scored 72 points on the Owls. That's a really high point total for a good team defensively in Rice. And you know, Eden Battle had 20 points, so it was really nice, and those all came in the second half. The USF really put up a good fight. And Jonathan, I know it's a loss, so you can't, it's hard to take moral victories in conference losses, but can USF still build on something like this where they play against literally the best team in the conference and they hang in there? So can they still take like some positives away from this loss?
For sure, especially since it was at Rice, you know,
right on the road.
This wasn't a home game, and they were right in it. But it just becomes one of those things. It's like USF, they're in a weird kind of spot because I think they're better than a lot of the teams that are. So they're third right now in the American, And I think they're better than North Texas, Tulsa, UTSA, Charlotte, FAU, who are kind of in that range, all between 9-5 and 6-7, 6-8. And then, you know, obviously there's there's East Carolina, who USF barely lost to, probably should have won that game. So if that seeding holds, which would be USF 2, ECU 3, that would be your semifinal matchup in the women's kind of conference tournament. And you would feel comfortable. It's tough. They got kind of screwed with the schedule. They had to go to ECU, and they had to go to Rice. And now they played Rice at home earlier the year and lost by two. But, yeah, they showed they can play with them for sure. And it's really hard to beat a team three times. If USF met Rice on a neutral floor in the conference championship, I'm sure Rice would not want to play them whatsoever. I mean, they're undefeated in conference right now. And it's not one of those undefeateds where it's like, wow, you know, they're just rolling people. You know what I mean? Now, they have rolled some people. But, you know, a lot of their games are closer. You know, North Texas by four. You know, that they only beat North Texas by four and two both times. They play ECU actually next upcoming, so that would be a big game within the conference. But, yeah, I mean, you play them twice. You play them down to the wire twice. It's really hard to beat the team three times. So if I'm USF, I'd be kind of licking my chops to play them again in a potential either semifinal or conference final.
Yeah, 100%. It's at least setting themselves up for a potential really, really tough matchup, like you said, in tournament play. And I don't think I would want to play them if I were Rice either, because it's really, really difficult to beat a team in close games like this, three straight games within a season. So it should be a lot of fun for sure. And they were close, you know, with 41 seconds to go, they were only down by five, which is a really close effort. So, you know, clean up some things and maybe they can take care of business. Hopefully they can take care of business in conference play, assuming, of course, that they get to play the Owls. But Musab, they got FAU coming up this Saturday, student appreciation night. It's at home. What you got for their matchup against FAU? Give us a little preview, because they lost to FAU right last time in January.
Yep, they lost by one, man. Oh, it was a heartbreaking loss. I remember it vividly, actually. It was tough. You know, just FAU, you know, getting a game-winning free throw at the buzzer, and then just, you know, there's some backstory, you know, with Stephanie Ingram being a former FAUL, you know, facing her old squad. She dropped 17 last game. You know, some things to look out for is, you know, just Carla Brito versus that undersized FAU front court. The three players I'm looking at, though, is, you know, Jesse Moores, Aaron Rodgers, and then also, you know, locking down their forward center, the rebound leader, Anuga, I'm forgetting her first name, but those are the three players I'm looking at. As y'all were saying, man, we got a real good bunch over here, you know, with the kind of team we have. It's just, you know, getting into the rhythm and playing smart, because, you know, the Bulls offense, you know, they lead the American Athletic Conference in field goals at 44.3%. So it's just going to come down to, you know, how much, you know, offense or how much, you know, defensive pressure, you know, we put on them. So and FAU is going to be coming in hot as well. This is the thing. This is what we saw last game. And I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the last second or so, I think it was Stephanie Ingram, you know, try to get something up, but I think it was a loose baller, and then it just, boom, end of game, you know. So this is what FAU's, you know, good at. You know, they, you know, they're averaging like 9 steals per game, you know. They're so one of the top in the league. So that's one big thing I'm looking at, is, you know, taking it easy on the turnovers, playing smart. And this is where, you know, the steals could happen if we start playing dumb and, you know, kind of really start pushing it, playing a little too fast pace. Sometimes that gets to us. So, those are kind of big things I'm looking at. But this is another exciting game. And as you were saying, Jonathan, I mean, this is, you know, minus, you know, ECU and Rice. I mean, this is a really competitive, you know, kind of, you know, conference we got going on. And hell, I think South Florida's rightfully at number three. I mean, the talent that I've seen from some of these teams, and then what I saw yesterday from Rice, I totally understand why Rice is number one. I mean, I want to give them credit as well during the show, because they really are a good team. They're a lot smarter. When I saw their game yesterday, I don't know why, but I just thought of how bad, and I hate to put him down like this, but how bad Tulane was against USF. It just, you know, comparing the ground to the sky. So seeing them and then, you know, seeing the comeback just, you know, tells me, you know, the kind of fight we have. You know, we don't go down without a fight, men and women's. So I think that's the best thing about our basketball team is, you know, we fight to the finish, and it's just a matter of cleaning up a couple of things, and, you know, we should be unstoppable on both ends.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, FAU's got a heck of a squad, and like you said, Rice does too. So it was certainly no shame for them to lose to either of these teams, but hopefully USF can take some revenge and get back on track after that loss to the top AAC team in the Rice Owls. Jonathan, FAU, they've got 9 steals per game. They're ranked top in the American Conference. What goes into preparing for a defense that can kind of swarm you defensively like that, that kind of can sometimes give you a little panic on offense when you got the ball in your hand? So what goes into preparations and practices for this type of defense?
Yeah, I mean, you got to take care of the ball. It's as simple as that. FAU doesn't, like, score at an elite level. They only have one girl averaging over 10 points per game. You know, they're not some juggernaut offensively. They stay in games like you talked about with defense and the steals. Number one, we talk about a lot with USF boys, is they got to take care of the basketball. You got to value the basketball. And then number two is use that aggression against them. You should be able to get a lot of backdoor cuts, a lot of set plays to hurt that aggressiveness that they'll play with. And if you do that, I mean, you'll be sitting pretty. You know, we just talk about like turnover numbers, and it's a little bit different depending on the team, but you know, if USF is under like 12 turnovers against FAU, they probably won the game. You know, it's something like that. So take care of business, use their pressure against them. Like we talk about backdoor cuts, and stuff like that, that allows you to get out and get easy baskets. And look, this is a big game. You know, you never want to say must win if it's not like in the conference tournament, but this feels like a very important win for USF going to the backstretch of the season.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely a game that they could lose theoretically, of course, and still be very much in it. But man, a win would go a long way towards making this season a lot more easier to a path towards success. So you know, it'll definitely be something to watch, something to monitor, and that student appreciation aspect of it, that should be kind of fun. So hopefully the crowd comes out and is doing their thing this Saturday night, because it could be a difference maker, you know. So we'll see how it goes. So we're shifting our focus to baseball now, because man, they got their season kicked off on a real high note. They took on the University of Illinois this past weekend, and they took the series, taking 2 out of 3 from Illinois. And now they've got a midweek clash with North Dakota State. It's their first ever win against North Dakota State, coming on Tuesday. They got out of there with a 9-5 victory. It was a long ass game, 3.5 hours. Very different from Major League Baseball with that pitch clock. But Nathan Early and Santiago Carriles provided the fireworks against these Bison. They both had a couple of two RBI doubles in a really big time, kind of crooked number type of inning where they scored 4 runs in the third. And Nakni Ana made his college debut, and then Jorge De Cardenas earned the win with 4 strikeouts over 3 2/3 innings coming in to follow him. So it was really, really fun to watch them take that victory on Tuesday. But getting back to the Illinois series, they had some really fun wins as well. An 11-10 win on Sunday. That was them clinching that opening series. They had a 3-run 8th inning, just really some big time performances. Were there any other guys that you wanted to highlight, Mr. Tariq, from this past week of USF Bulls baseball?
Yeah, man, it was a great weekend. Brad Killory, launching a 2-run home run. During the Illinois series, and on top of that, then Jevin Relaford earned AAC Player of the Week, honorable mention, after hitting .500 he got 2 triples and a 1.167 slugging percentage over the weekend. So, overall, Bulls offense has been on fire. They've scored 31 runs over their first 4 games. They're, you know, as of right now, 3-1. Got another game tonight against North Dakota State. Tonight at 6, and then Georgia Southern will come to us for the weekend. So should be fun, you know, just getting these guys warmed up. And, just wins all around. And so iconic. I mean, you know, seeing that 11-10 win, kind of just tuning in whenever possible I could. you know, seeing, oh, do we have it? Do they have it? And then, oh, snap, they do, you know? So,
yeah,
man, absolutely. I'm excited to see what else this baseball team does.
Yeah, man, they've cranked out some fun players. USF has. They've had Coco Montez, who played for the Rockies for a few years, and obviously Shane McClanahan, probably the big one that's still active now. So, you know, this baseball team's got some talent. They've had some really good players over the years, and hopefully this season they can continue that tradition. And this next North Dakota State game starts in, I think, a minute. It's 5:59 right now.
Oh wow! So
it should be kind of fun. And then Georgia Southern coming here for the weekend. It's a really fun time to be a baseball fan in general in Tampa Bay. They've got, you know, spring training and all that going on, and now they've got USF baseball. I know that might be not nearly as important to some folks as spring training, but hey, you know, they've got a good baseball team too. So it's been really fun. We'll see how they do. And this USF baseball team, man, they've got some tough opponents coming up. They're going to go to UCF in a few weeks, I believe, to take on the UCF Knights in Orlando. So that should be kind of fun, that reignition of the war on I-4. Obviously, we haven't seen it in football or basketball really for a while. Kind of disappointing. But, hey, the baseball people are still keeping it alive. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. We'll see how it goes. But moving our focus to the softball team, Mr. Tariq, I wanted to give you the floor to talk about the Fonseca Memorial Tournament. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The USF softball team finished 8-4. Through the Fonseca Memorial Tournament, they won 4 out of the 5 games this past week, or after winning 4 of the 5 games that past week, but. It was a very dramatic way, the way things ended, you know, back-to-back walk-off victories against Boston College and DePaul. Wanted to give a shout out to Alexa Galigani, who was the hero on Sunday against DePaul. She went 3-for-3 with a walk-off bunt single in the 8th inning, and then she earned the win in the circle against DePaul, tossing 2.1 innings of, you know, like kind of hitless, relief, allowing us to win 2-1. It was a very low scoring match. But Saturday, USF, you know, rallied from a 4-run 7th inning, you know, comeback to stun Boston College 5-4 and secure their first walk-off of the weekend. So we split a doubleheader with Kansas. We lost 7-2, then we bounced back with a 5-0 shutout win over Yale. Shout out McKenna Schroding. She was real dominant against Yale. Perfect. She's tied, you know, with a couple of other players in the whole NCAA with a 0 ERA and completed her second shutout this season so far. So a couple other, you know, names I wanted to give a shout out to. Caris Pierce. She went 3-for-3 at the plate and a 4-2 win over Indiana State. And then shout out Kathy Garcia Soto. She actually enters this week tied for the national lead in triples. Also has a 7-game reached base streak. So the girls are cooking. And we'll be back in action. We'll be back in action. We'll be back in action today tonight at the USF Softball Stadium for a little midweek doubleheader against Stetson. But then the fun really begins afterwards. And what is USF doing again? Well, they're hosting another legendary softball tournament, this time with St. Joseph's, with Marist, BC Eagles, or Boston College Eagles are back looking to get some revenge. And then Colgate and Indiana. So we're going to open up the USF Invitational this Thursday, the 19th, against St. Joseph's, first pitch being at 6:05 p.m. I already, you know, gave a shout out to Kathy Garcia, but I also want to mention she's 9th and
hit by pitches.
Yeah, I had a little brain fart there. And then 28th in the NCAA with assists. And then McKenna Schroding, with tied in the nation with a 0 ERA, and then has a conference best 0.77
whip.
Whip, yeah. So, yeah. Wow. Go ahead. And remind me, what does WHIP stand for again?
So it's walks and innings
pitch.
Yeah, walks and hits per innings pitch. Thank you, John.
Yeah. Wow. So yeah, and she's fourth in the country with two shutouts. So I mentioned that already.
There you go.
Look, I'm still learning more and more about this legendary softball team. I mean, you know, people are not, you know, yapping about Coach, you know, Erickson for no reason. So I'm excited to see, you know, what else they do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was really excited to see that walk-off bunt single. That's kind of fun. Jonathan, I want to get your take on sort of a higher up picture of the baseball and softball world. Are you more of a small ball type of guy when it comes to the baseball and softball world? Because I know you got the Ray stuff in the background. What style of baseball or softball do you enjoy most? Is it the bunts or is it the big time home runs? What do you like to see out there?
I hate the guys that like Kyle Schwarber. I love Kyle Schwarber as a player, but a few years ago when he had like 40 home runs and hit like .190. I don't know. That just kind of drives me crazy. And people would say like how valuable it is because his B WAR is like 7.1 or whatever, and it's like that's great. And like Kyle Tucker might be like literally that's not Kyle Tucker. Kyle Schwarber and might be like one of my favorite non-Rays baseball players. So I don't know why I used him, but it's like I sound like I love small ball. I'm not like on my knees like oh my gosh, Yandy Diaz needs to lay one down right here, man. Right at the first baseline, you know, sure. But. When I see Chandler Simpson get a bunt single, I'm not hating it. I'll tell you that much. I do love that. But the interesting thing about softball, and we mentioned like the dominant pitching of USF, you can throw like every day in softball. You don't need a rotation because of the way – okay, that's a little dramatic. But you see people once you get in the NCAA tournament literally throw every single inning or like 90% of the innings just because of the motion of your arm is different, right? It's not as strenuous on your arm. So, I'm not I'm a little bit in the middle. I love how Junior Caminero plays. So let's go there. But no, it's funny in the new age of baseball, especially when they juiced the baseballs a few years ago, where it was all home run or bust type stuff. You know, I love a good 2 RBI double. There's nothing wrong with that, right in the gap.
Hey, heck yeah. And USF had a couple of them, you know, like we mentioned with early in Carriles, they had some fireworks with those two RBI doubles in that third inning. So, the baseball team's kind of playing some fun baseball, but hopefully they'll play some aesthetically pleasing baseball as well as to winning baseball. That's always a good marriage there. And same with the softball team. You know, it seems like their pitching staff, like you said, they've got some real horses out there that can really do their thing. Especially, man, Schroding doing her thing. Shout out McKenna. She's having a great season so far. Having a couple of shutouts like that to start the season, you can really get your season off to the right foot right there. So that's going to be really fun. And yeah, the USF Invitational, inviting a team like Indiana, they're 7-3 to start the season. Obviously, the Hoosiers are a big-time program and a lot of other aspects as well, their softball team being no different. So, USF's going to have some tests this weekend in their softball program. And, it should be a lot of fun to watch them do their thing. And we keep you all up to date, both with baseball and softball. It's sort of similar to women's basketball and men's basketball. They're kind of intertwined. We kind of like to talk about them in the same manner. So we'll definitely keep them in the loop and keep them updated. But now I'm shifting our focus to lacrosse. They took home a 16-10 home loss against Michigan. It was kind of disappointing, but at the same time, Michigan, I mean, they're the Wolverines, like the University of Michigan. They're such a massive program. We saw what happened in this game. Why couldn't USF hold that 5-1 lead that they started out with?
Yeah, man. We started out hot, but then, you know, Michigan just started cooking. We were dominating overall for the first half. We had an 8-5 advantage. Shout out Sophia Chepinick, racked up 6 goals against University of Michigan, allowing herself to earn American Athletic Conference honorable mention after her performance. But no, unfortunately, Michigan just kind of flipped the script, you know, went on a 5-1 run in the third quarter and just, you know, again, pulled away late, you know, 6-1, you know, in towards the end of the game. So still some positives to take away. At least Grissette, you know, 2 points away from reaching 150 for her career after netting a goal, on Sunday. And then Ava Uphues, she also chipped in 2 goals, while Maggie Newton added a goal and an assist. And again, look, we we came out hot against a real good team. You know, this is the 16th ranked in the nation. So, you know, that's one big positive takeaway, and it, you know, kind of just firing up the home crowd. But yeah, as of right now, we're standing 1-1. You know, this is our second year of the program, but we will be heading to DeLand to take on Stetson. And then, you know, we'll bounce back, have Mercer come on over to our house, you know, and we'll be playing at noon. We wanted to give a shout out just because I was curious to see, you know, never been to a lacrosse game. You know, what's it like, you know, going to a college lacrosse game? And hey, $12 with taxes, you know, it's come on. You know what I'm saying? If you're in the area, come on, stop on by. Yeah. So yeah, stop on by and, you know, get a little bit of action. And listener, this is the best part. I guarantee you, if you step on the USF campus any day, chances are there is a USF athletic event on campus.
That's right.
Yeah. So stop on by the good old Temple Terrace.
Heck yeah. Yeah, man, I'll be at USF tomorrow for my day gig. And yeah, there's always something going on with the athletic department. And the lacrosse team is definitely one of those things, you know, definitely check it out. It's a good deal. $12 for a little bit of entertainment this weekend, you know, got to check it out. So now, speaking of stepping foot on campus, the tennis courts, they got brand new ones. And so the two tennis teams have been able to take advantage of those. And the men's team crushed Georgia Southern 6-1 in their Sunday home opener. It was the debut of those brand new on-campus varsity tennis courts. I have been out there. They are really nice. Definitely worth checking out. And Hugo Carr, he finally, you know, he's kind of the man on this team. He's kind of the most talked about player there. And he had a couple, he was part of the effort to sweep the two doubles matches, 6-1 wins from him and Ettore Danesi and James Newton and Toto Lalanis. Good gracious, I'm learning these names just like the rest of y'all. And then Hugo Carr also was dominant in singles. He had straight set 6-3, 6-3 victories on court one to seal that team victory. Are there any other performances from this men's tennis tennis victory from this past weekend that you wanted to focus on, Mr. Tariq?
I mean, yeah, you mentioned already, like, you know, those are the big ones. But yeah, Googie Verdesi and Austin Solar also, you know, racked up some wins. And then, yeah, Elijah Shaman, Ettore Danesi came through, you know, with some wins. So, I mean, yeah, it was just, I mean, I don't want to call it like bully ball, but I mean, we was just, you know, we just took off, we dominated. And I also wanted to mention, yeah, regarding those courts, I saw a bunch of videos and photos. Hell, I even saw a live stream, I think, of one of the tennis matches. Dude, those courts look real nice. You know what I'm saying? And,
yeah,
you know, the thing that excites me is, you know, as nice as they look and yay, new courts for our team and all that, is just that Florida, first of all, is just such a weather friendly, you know, kind of area, you know, for tennis. And now we have, you know, we've got a brand new facility. So it makes me wonder if we could see some future, you know, other, you know, maybe like an American Athletic Conference tournament maybe happening here in Tampa. We'll see. Yeah, man.
For sure. Well, yeah, I mean, this is all some great stuff. Jonathan, I know you have to head out. Do you have any closing thoughts on the men's or women's tennis teams? Or
I'm a big tennis person. I played tennis in middle school. So don't look
really?
I'm an avid Wimbledon watcher.
Nice.
That's my extent of tennis. But
okay.
No, I have one of my best friends actually was like a pretty unbelievable tennis player during our time in high school. So, like you said, I mean, the USF is like their athletic department are above average in literally like every single sport. That is incredibly difficult to do. So, like we talked about, like there's never a bad sporting event to go to at the University of South Florida.
Yeah. Well, go Bulls, and we'll see you next week, Jonathan. I know you got to head out.
Thank you, Jonathan. Yeah,
appreciate you guys. See you guys next week.
Hopping on. Yes, sir. See you next week. That's Jonathan Shields. So, yeah, the two tennis teams, they had themselves quite a weekend. And now we'll shift our focus to the track and field events, both men and women's. Mr. Tariq, you are a track and field man. You are constantly on the run. I see you posting all those, you know, those marathon opportunities or the running opportunities. So I want to give you the floor to just go at it, because you are much more into this than I am, I must admit.
Yeah, man. No. Thank you very much. Hey, man. Yeah, some good stuff from our men and women's track team. We got, you know, we recorded 3 new program records, multiple podium finishes at the Jarvis City Invite. So the Carla Brito, the Isaiah Nelson, the Hugo Carr of our men's track team, Mr. Markel Jones, who has, you know, won American Athletic Conference player or, you know, runner or athlete of the week. Claim first place, yeah. In the 60 meter hurdles, racked up a 7.67, and then Nathan Metellus, came through in the 200 meter, set a program record, and then wanted to give a shout out to Alexavier Monfries, who got sixth place at 20.95. So as you can tell, 20.66, 20.95 first, and well, actually, I have to check his place again, but it's just. It's crazy how many, how much of a couple milliseconds can make a difference. But Kareem Belmadi, he just absolutely destroyed the 800 meter record, racked up a 1:49 and got a fourth place finish in the 800 meter event. Men's 4x4 that consisted of Devontae Archer, Nathan Metellus, Alexavier Monfries, and Markel Jones. Captured first place and set a new program record of 3:03. So, this is probably one of the things or one of the teams to look at, for our track team is, when you get our best 800 meter or our best, 200 meter runner, and then our best 60 meter runner, you all collaborate. It's just not real nice to see, when you got other athletes from other races, kind of teaming up and, getting that first place and, new program record. So, but for our women's side, Doris Cueno, second place in the 60 meter hurdles, got a PB, our personal best time of 8:23. And then for our 800 meter, we got Mercy and Angam Chab. All right. And she racked up a time of 2:10. Got second place in the 800. Hey, shout out to USF alumni, the legend Abdul Rashid Saminu. All right, your, I believe, NCAA 200 meter champion from last year, or I don't think it was 100. Yeah, he was the NCAA 200 meter champion, or I know he was definitely on the 4x4 championship team. So, anyways, yeah, the legend is back. He clocked a 6.54 in the 60 meter semifinals. But this was, for the professionals. So it was a separate kind of race. Otherwise, yeah, he would have, beaten Markel Jones. So I just wanted to clarify that there's an open invite at a lot of these events, at a lot of these big events, there'll be open invites. Sometimes professionals just need a little something to warm up. They kind of want to see, where they at, he was out there, but we're going to be starting our outdoor season this Saturday, the 21st, at the Tampa Classic. And then indoors is, kind of wrapping up. The American Athletic Conference Indoor Championships are next week. So this is just kind of the kind of phase, I guess. If you ask me, indoor doesn't matter that much compared to the outdoors, just because we don't watch the Olympics tracks indoors, because of the effect the wind has.
Okay.
And on top of that, indoor is 200 meters, So you can't break a 400 meter world record running around the track twice. So unfortunately, I wish you can, but that's just, all those little physics and the calculations and the data, Yeah. It just doesn't work out like that. So indoor is more of just a kind of a warm-up thing. Opportunity, to be honest, it's an opportunity for Northern schools to kind of get some action. Carter, we could be doing outdoor like starting in December, But
right.
This is peak indoor time. Yeah, especially because I know like Boston University, for example, has a couple of big meets for distance and sprinters. So this is just that time. But outdoors starting soon, that's when the real fun's gonna begin. And yeah, man, I'm excited for that.
Hey, I'm really happy that you explained all that, because I got to be honest, I did not know that there was like a, I don't want to call it a stigma because that seems too harsh, but that there's a, that there is like a significant difference between the two. I always kind of, you know, thought, oh, well, indoor, outdoor, like, sure, there's a difference.
And then also the, yeah, the track indoor is also weirdly curved. It's like,
Okay.
Like if you ever watch an indoor meet, you'll see spectators are like, they kind of look like they're like sinking, like from the track, because the track is kind of elevated. Okay. It's, yeah, it's real interesting, man.
Gotcha. That kind of makes you raise your eyebrow a little bit, like a Musab Tariq ism, if you would. You kind of interesting stuff. So yeah, that'll be something to keep in mind, and we'll keep you all updated with all of our track and field stuff, or rather, I should say, Mr. Musab Tariq will keep you updated with all of the track and field stuff, and doing some quick hitters to finish out our show to kind of round it out. Because we want to shout out the golf and the beach volleyball teams, but we'll start with golf. Wilhelm Reiting, he's been named the American Athletic Conference Men's Golf Player of the Week. He had a standout performance at the Gators Invitational. He finished runner-up at the Mark Bostic Golf Course as well. He had an opening round of 68 and a standout 65 in the second rounds, a couple of really impressive scores. And that second round performance, among the lowest scores in the field, he was very firmly positioned in contention heading in to the final day. So it was really impressive stuff. And then he was competing in a pretty highly competitive national field, and he led the Bulls throughout the event, finished second overall, led the Bulls to a fourth place finish. So that was really fun. And then Nino Palmquist, he delivered a statement victory, or excuse me, a statement performance to win the individual title at the 2026 St. Leo Invitational. So that was kind of fun as well. They were over at the Lake Jovita Golf and Country Club. He competed as an individual, and he had three rounds under par, an impressive final round score of 65 that really clinched the victory. So up next, March 7th through 9th, they're going to the Height Invitational. It's hosted at Sawgrass Country Club in Ponte Verde Beach, Florida. How about beach volleyball, Mr. Tariq? What's going on with them? I know they had a tournament, or they're having a tournament this Friday at the Green Wave Invitational in the Big Easy, right? It's Fat Tuesday. It's the week of Mardi Gras. So lots of stuff going on. And the USF beach volleyball team, they're going to be down there, huh?
Hell yeah. Yeah, man. USF beach volleyball is making its debut. Yeah. At the Green Wave Invitational. And we are going to be members of not the American Athletic Conference, but the Conference USA. Okay. So that's going to be interesting. Yeah, you know, so, you know, we'll be, you know, facing teams like, you know, New Orleans, LSU, Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, and, yeah, Tulane. A little backstory. I mean, this is, you know, the head coach, her name is Priya Pantiadosi Lima, and she mentioned this is her, you know, her dream job after a 17-year pro career. You know, she's been doing this since 2015 in the Tampa Bay area. You know what I'm saying? So she's got that experience, as we all know. I mean, pro experience. She's already been part of the Tampa Bay beach volleyball community since 2015. So, I mean, it just excites you that, you know, she's ready. She's part of the game. And, you know, we got some of that championship DNA. You know, we got talent from other institutions who transferred on over here, you know, to the good old Sunshine State. Shout out Josephine Seck, who transferred from Texas Christian University, and Zoe Mitchell, who transferred from University of Southern California, who will be kind of, you know, one of more of our, you know, key players this upcoming season. So the USF athletic program did announce they're going to be like a six court, you know, lighted beach facility at the Tampa General Hospital Athletics District. You know what I'm saying, man? This is just getting better and better with USF athletics, man. Dude, yeah. When I went to USF, or when we went to USF, Carter, dude, right. USF was just, it was a commuter school.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You tell Joe Schmo down the road, I go to USF, he's going to be like, oh, that's a commuter school.
Right.
Yeah, my buddy went to SBC and then transferred over there.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Now you tell Joe Schmo I went to USF, and he's gonna be like, "Oh man, you saw that nasty double by Carla Brito, or that slam dunk from Isaiah Nelson, or yeah." So man, what a time to be a USF Bull, Carter.
Yeah, man, and yeah, I love that they're building out some beach volleyball stuff, because beach volleyball is so big. I mean, obviously Tampa Bay is probably one of the bigger spots for it because of the beautiful beaches and all that. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on at USF, and I'm glad they're adding a beach volleyball team, because we played like intramural stuff at USF St. Pete at the St. Pete campus when I was at school there. There was no talk at all of like any type of professional stuff or anything like that, but people could take it a little bit too seriously sometimes. But obviously in this case, you're supposed to take it seriously. It's part of it. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. We'll keep y'all updated as the beach volleyball season and all of these other great sports continue. So definitely stay tuned for that. We'll keep y'all in the loop, and we'll continue to cover these great USF athletic department sports, because, you know, this is part of it. This is, you know, this is the beauty of this school, is that they've got, like Jonathan was saying, there's really not a sport that you look at and you think, man, USF could probably cut this program. All these programs are really doing well or thriving. So we'll keep y'all updated with all of it. Thank you to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Musab Tariq, is obviously, as well as Jonathan Shields, who had to log off a little bit early, but really appreciate y'all for making my job easier. And thank y'all for tuning in. Hit that like and subscribe button on the way out. We'll see y'all next week. But until then, and as always, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.